Geocentric, episode 15.
The dark side of the music industry.
Five big mistakes. Whoa, whoa, hold on, dude. What? Do you hear that?
Yeah, probably just a police chase or something. Let's go ahead with the show.
All right. What's our first topic? Dude, what? Dude, something is definitely wrong. All right, listeners, just hold on a minute. I gotta go get the door. All right, I'm coming. Hold on.
Geocentric, this is RIAA. Come out with your hands in the sky.
We're recording this podcast.
What did he say?
Dude, let's use a megaphone.
All right.
Hey, RIA, Media Century, get this. Screw you. You invade our privacy. You target poor innocent civilians.
Hold and hold with a root.
Geocentric
is developing into a very bad
habit. You ignore the will of your own shareholders.
Inconceivable.
With you destroy the rights of the citizens.
We have an obligation to fight them until they are vanished.
You're destroying our planet.
I don't have a really good feeling about
this. You bypass the wills of people. You push money over ethics. Kindness is over people. You attempt to trample us down. You call us pirates. If civil rights count for piracy, then we are pirates. And we will prevail.
Okay, you can put the megaphone down.
All right, I guess we'll have to destroy the megaphones till next time they show up at the door. They're gone, by the way.
If you couldn't tell, that was the RIAA, backed up by their bullying arm, Media Century, attempting to try and stop us from recording this show today, but we did not give in.
That's right. As you see, this podcast is up and fully functional for your listening pleasure. They didn't stop us.
Right, and in case you're wondering what that was all about, today is our monthly special, and we're going to be talking all about the unethical practices of the RIAA. Now, if you're unfamiliar with that, don't worry. We're going to start from scratch and fill you in. And basically, the whole idea is whether or not a company should be able to control something that you buy from them after you buy it, or whether you should have full rights to that once you've bought it.
And we're going to reveal five big mistakes of the dark side of the recording industry. So, let's see what's coming up for the show. Let's cue the music.
Cued.
How are they finding us?
By invading our privacy.
Who are they targeting?
Poor defenseless people.
Why are they not popular?
On Wall Street, it's because they ignore the will of the shareholder.
What are the environmental effects?
Well, for one thing, they're not green. DRM destroys the planet.
Who are they in bed with?
Politicians and not us.
Unfortunately.
So we're going to issue a call to action.
That's right. We're going to tell you about what you need to do to get involved to stop this. And we're going to tell you about a new website that's really cool that'll help you with this, called Defective by Design. So let's kick off the show.
Also on the show today, Stump Cha-Cha. Okay, so here we go. How do you get involved? As always, remember, our new website is www.bringthemagic.com/geocentric. Nate's Magic Moments Entertainment DJ company is sponsoring that for the moment until we decide that we want to pay the money for our own domain name. But until
I'll be charging us pretty soon.
Until then, it's bringthemagic.com/geocentric. Email us at geocentric@inbox.com and send us a call at 206-337-1504. 206-337-1504 is the number.
In fact, why don't you call that number right now and give us your shout-outs against the RIAA? How about that?
We do want to hear it.
We would love to hear it. So again, that number, John.
That number is 206-337-1504.
He's got it by memory. That's what I'm talking about.
Look at the screen. That was pretty good.
Not bad at all.
Oh, also, before we jump into it, I want to make one more honorable mention. I have discovered a Firefox extension which I cannot live without. I'm using it to help myself keep notes and everything for the podcast this week. It's called Tint, T-Y-N-T, and even though it's still in beta, I highly recommend it. What you can do with Tint is you sign up with an account, and it will let you go in and highlight sections of any web page, and will save those highlights for you, so you can close Firefox, come back to it later, and you can pull up your highlights. Not only that, but it lets you leave notes for yourself.
That's awesome.
Type in little sticky notes and things. It's great. So I've got all my stuff organized.
I'll admit I'm pretty jealous right now because I just have tabs open as usual. I don't have cool highlights and notes, and you can actually make a thought bubbles and
stuff.
That's
right. You can make word bubbles and thought bubbles, and
That's pretty cool.
You can even put little political campaign stickers if you want to. You can draw on the pictures. And you can
I have signed up, but I haven't. So I just barely signed up for it. So I don't even have anything highlighted yet, but by the next show, I'm going to be all over it. So guys, again, check that out. Tint.
So we want to give a shout out to our friends at Tint, tint.com. And let's start with our first topic. Nate, why don't we start by explaining just exactly what the debate is?
Okay, the first thing that we need to... By the way, I was thinking TYNT kind of reminds me of TMNT. They should use that for their advertising slogan. Have a couple Ninja Turtles come on there. No, not us. TYNT.
Radical, dude. Cowabunga.
Cowabunga. I made a funny... That's Splinter.
You ninjas must be in secret.
All right, anyways. Ninja rap. Anyways,
let's not
that was
do
been
the ninja rap.
Probably getting
okay,
trouble
okay,
for that
let's,
one.
We got it. We got to move along.
That's right. Okay. First thing is the tactics that the RIAA and their bully arm Media Sentry are using to find us. How are they finding us?
Well, they find us by spying on us, stalking us, and laying traps for us. And I want to explain for anybody who really, really has hardly any knowledge of this already, the RIAA stands for the something like the Recording Industry Association of America, something like that. What it is it's basically a group that advocates for intellectual property rights of the recording industry. And what they do is they push things like DRM, which stands for Digital Rights Management. And if you don't know what that is, you probably have had experiences with DRM already. If you've ever bought an MP4 or an M4P is what they're called, the file type that you get from iTunes these days when you download a song, unless you download our podcast, which is DRM free and MP3
format. And it's free.
That's right. It's free and DRM free. But
you don't have to pay
what it does is
anything.
After you purchase this item, Apple and many others will encode things into their file format. That's why it's an M4P and not an MP3. That makes it so you can only do so much with it, even though you've bought it. You can only install it on 5 machines. You can't convert it into an MP3. You can't pull that file into GarageBand and play with it, edit it, or anything. And so it's supposed to protect intellectual properties and be anti-piracy. And so the RIAA is the group that sues people when they catch them, violating intellectual property rights. And they have this company that they've contracted called Media Sentry, which is basically, we called them earlier, their bullying arm.
That's right.
And they were the really pansy voice represented at the beginning when we had that big
that
argument
was,
with
that
them.
That was John's voice. Once again, he represented not only the Media Sentry pansy voice, but also the robust German-esque voice behind the megaphone.
Not to say that all Germans are Nazis.
In fact, I love Germans.
As do I. But
so here's what we got. Check
anyway,
this out.
So these people. So Media Sentry tries to catch you, and then they turn you over to the RIAA. So Particle.com.
Chronicle.
Sorry, I thought you said Particle. I didn't know what you were talking about, but I figured
Chronicle.com. Found an RIAA employee who would speak only on the condition of anonymity.
And why might one want to speak only on the condition of anonymity?
Well, you heard the guys outside our door only moments ago. They're not very nice. So you don't want to talk bad about them when they're around. Otherwise, you might be in trouble.
The other thing is, if this guy was to reveal his name, he might be found by all of the people who are totally anti-RIAA and get a lot of hate mail and a lot of harassment from
that
group.
That's true,
because
he pretty much lays out how it goes. Here's one way that he says that they do it. They check out LimeWire. For those of you who don't know, LimeWire is a popular peer-to-peer file-sharing program.
Kind of like Napster originally was.
Mm-hmm. And it's used mostly by college students. A lot of high school students, a lot of everybody, but mostly college students. Here's how the process works, says the RIAA mystery employee. The RIAA maintains a list of songs whose distribution rights are owned by the RIAA's member organizations. And by that, they mean basically major record labels,
right,
to sum it up. It has It has given that list to Media Sentry, a company it hired to search for online pirates. That company runs copies of the LimeWire program and performs searches for those copyrighted song titles, one by one, to see if any are being offered by people whose computers are connected to the LimeWire network. For popular songs, the search can turn up dozens, if not hundreds, of hits. A search on Madonna's latest release, 4 Minutes, turned up more than 100 users trading various copies of the song.
Right, so in other words, they turn on LimeWire, and they type in a song, and they find out that you happen to have that song in your shared folder.
Yeah, because there's all these people there that are sharing it, right. Okay? The LimeWire software allows users who right-click on any song entry and choose Browse Host to see all the songs that a given file share is offering. So, basically, if you like the song that a certain host has, you can see what else they have. Okay? So then they go into that. And what the software does is also lists, here's the key right here. It lists the IP address of the person who is sharing the file. And tell us what an IP address is.
You can think of the IP address as your computer's address. And every computer out there has got it, that it connects to the internet has its own address.
It's kind of like it's computer's fingerprint, right?
Right. And the way I like to think of it is like mail. If I want to visit a web page, my computer has to know the address of where that web page is, kind of like if I wanted to visit their house or send them a letter. Yeah. And so that there's a number called the IP address that my computer knows to send out and go there to get the certain web page like Google.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it has to know where to come back to.
Mm-hmm.
So my computer also has an address that the signal comes back to, and that address is also displayed in LimeWire. And the big debate about that is, and the big controversy, is that you can actually, through various circuits, use an IP address to link to a person's actual name and who they are.
And then you get into huge privacy issues, which, of course, should be a concern to all of us.
Right.
So basically, one of the keys to the IP address, too, is that it's unique.
Mm-hmm. Everybody has a different IP address.
Every computer. Yeah.
Yes, every computer.
So then they find the IP address, and then they get the names associated with those IP addresses, either by demanding them from colleges, universities, or by the service providers like Comcast or any of those guys out there.
And it is safe to say that for the most part, the internet service providers have not been turning over IP addresses so much.
Yes.
For example, Comcast at this point doesn't turn over IP addresses to the RIAA. And such, because they've in the past traditionally had their own methods of dealing with piracy. Man, my voice is shot from all that screaming.
Oh, that it's the megaphone, dude.
Right.
Okay, so then what they do is they find your IP address, and they find out, first of all, if you're going through a university connection, and if you are, they send a message to the university saying, find all these people, track them down, give us a list of them, and we'll do a lawsuit. Universities haven't been too happy about this because it's naturally digging into the time that they could be using to affect quality education and bring quality education into the lives of the students.
Right.
Instead, they're demanded by the RIAA, who has nothing to do with the college or university, that they need to be spending all their time gathering lists of people to turn over to them to prosecute them.
Right. And if you don't mind, I want to go ahead and throw this in here, that there are certain universities, one in particular, which is the, I believe, is it Michigan State? Or, no, it's the, it's Central Michigan University.
All right.
They have actually filed a complaint with the Michigan Department of Labor and Economic Growth, accusing Media Sentry of conducting investigations without a private investigator license.
Ah, key.
So that's the other key thing, is that the RIAA sends Media Sentry out there to do investigations, which means investigate the identity, habits, conduct, business, occupation, activity, transactions, acts, or character of a person, or secure evidence to be used before court. And they've been doing this without private investigator licenses. So you have to remember that the RIAA is not a law enforcement agency, and neither is Media Sentry. They're their own private organizations.
That's right. Now, here's another key, is that fines can result into up to $150,000 per violation. Now, I'm pretty sure that means per song. So if you have like 10 songs, that's a lot of money.
Right.
And that's only 10 songs. And basically, the way they do it is they say that as long as they can find it on your computer, as long as you're making it available, as long as they can download it, they say that that's proof. The RIAA actually said that any higher standard of actual proof would, quote, cripple copyright enforcement in the digital age. Quote, requiring proof of actual transfers would cripple efforts to enforce copyright owners' rights online and would solely benefit those who seek to freeload off plaintiffs' investment. And that's RIAA attorney Timothy Reynolds, who lives... No, I'm just kidding.
I wish. I want to go ahead, though, and we can start pointing out some problems with this logic, I think. One of the big things that, that Nate just mentioned here is the logic that if your files are made available for download your computer, then they say that's proof enough that you are doing illegal transactions.
That's right. To translate, as long as the bloody glove is in your house, no higher standard of proof should be used because, you know, once... You know, that would cripple the effects to prosecute you. So as long as that bloody glove is in your house, doesn't matter how it got there or if you even put it in there, or maybe it's not really blood on the glove. It doesn't matter because any higher standard of actual proof,
as long as they can look in the window and see. Right. So the problem here is that, for one thing, any decent hacker can get at the files on your computer if you don't have proper security. So in that case, you can make the case using this argument that all files on every computer are always available to be hacked into and thus downloaded by somebody else.
Uh-huh.
So the trick is, by using the logic, if it looks available, then definitely that's against the law. Definitely they are making illegal transactions, so we definitely should find them.
It doesn't work
because hackers can get in there by that same logic and get your files. Everyone's files are available to download. That's what spyware does.
Yep.
Is it spies on you and sends out information from you, and then people can get in, and it opens up holes for people to take your files and all kinds of stuff.
Or add files.
Or even add files.
Or do whatever the crap they want if they can hack into your
computer.
That's
right. I remember a case not too long ago, and I don't know how this got resolved, but there was a guy who was busted for child pornography, and his excuse was that he had no idea any of that was on there, and his attorney was saying what happened was some hacker was actually using his computer as a storage device for child pornography so that hacker couldn't be implicated.
Uh-huh. And now, don't get me wrong. I think we should be much more strict to child predators, although I still think there needs to be a burden of proof. It needs to be innocent until proven guilty. That's what we've always been about. However, what's so unique about this is that we're talking about downloading a song, and they're using these kind of, you know what I mean? Like they're using the same standard. As long as it's there, whether you knew it or not, then you're automatically guilty.
And think about this too. Let's say that I have a legal copy of music that I bought. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And so it's entirely legal and it's on my computer. And let's say I use Kazaa or LimeWire or whatever to download legal open source type things because you can use that. Now let's say I take the legal file that I download and I happen to store it in a folder on my computer called shared. Maybe I'm not so tech savvy and I don't realize, you know, that LimeWire accesses the shared folder, and I just want to keep
and
all
it actually
my
could
downloads
be called
together.
It could be called a different folder too.
Right. So let's say I just have made some mistake and I've put it in this folder and I've never made an illegal transaction. Mm-hmm. Based on what the RIAA is saying, I can be taken to court and made to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars
for this
just because they see it in my shared folder, which is another issue, whether or not they should be able to spy on you.
Here's the other thing. What if you're one of those people like me that like to back up your music?
Right.
You want to back it up to your computer, maybe back it up to some CDs in case, you know, since CDs, when they get scratched, they don't play very well. Well, that's another reason for them to go after you. So if you think you're safe just because you're not one of those people that's downloaded hundreds of albums, you know, don't think again. Think again, I mean.
Right.
Definitely think again, because... Basically, don't be too sure of yourself is what I'm trying to get at. Because as long as you're copying music, backing it up, or doing any of these things, you might not even be doing any of these things. Someone else could be doing it on your computer, and that's reason enough for them to take you to court. And so what happens then? What kind of people do they take to court? The answer is everybody.
Yeah. And it seems like they try to make examples of the common person.
The person that can't really afford their own legal fees.
Perhaps for deterrence or whatever. But they will, I mean, if nothing else, they will at least try to make the case that a person's making available a file counts for attempted copyright infringement, which is another thing, because there's actually They try to base it on the Copyright Act of 1976, which doesn't count for attempted copyright infringement.
What's interesting, let me tell you about one of these, was they went to do a case against this man who they couldn't prove anything, that he did anything. And he had to pay all these legal fees.
By the way, they have 20,000 lawsuits at the moment.
I heard it's actually over 25,000 now.
Is that
more than 25,000? Is what?
Wow. So it's grown since this article was written in June.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So because I saw a more recent article that said 25,000 plus. So
wow.
Yeah, pretty crazy. I don't know the exact number, but this guy was taken to court. And so he had to pay legal fees because he was summoned to court, okay?
Right.
And they didn't have anything, any real proof against him, you know, just this proof that we described, which they even admit is a lower standard of proof, which should be ringing a lot of bells, first of all. Well, come to find out that he actually didn't do any of it. It was his oldest daughter who was an adult.
Right.
And so what did they do? They dropped the case for him. And the judge ordered him to pay all the legal fees, and then they went after his daughter. So even though it was proven that he didn't do it, and they went after him, first of all, illegally, because that's the other thing about Media Century, mm-hmm. is they don't have a license to do this. They don't have a license to wiretap our computers, as it were,
right.
to go through and search our things. They don't have a license to be investigators. So really, what they're doing is illegal by all... You know,
right? Because, and that's why you don't see Media Century downloading files from you to prove that you made the transaction, and they do actually do that in some cases that they call huge cases of piracy or whatever. But in 99% of cases where they try to catch somebody, what they do is, like we said, they look to see across LimeWire if you've got something in your shared folder, and then they have a piece of software that sort of sends a signal out to your computer to make sure that it's actually there and actually available to be downloaded, and the signal comes back and tells them it's actually there, it's ready. If you hit download, it would work. And they don't actually download the file. And one of the speculations is because, like we said, the RIAA and Media Century are not law enforcement agencies.
Yeah.
And Media Century in particular owns no rights to the music, no intellectual property. And so them not being a law enforcement agency, for them to download the music would be to engage in illegal activity themselves.
It's basically illegal bounty hunting.
Right. Kind of.
Digital illegal bounty hunting.
That's a good way to think of it.
That's basically what it comes down to. So first of all, should evidence in the courtroom that is obtained illegally even be used in the courtroom?
Of course not. Evidence that's obtained illegally is always thrown out.
Except in these cases.
That's right. That's right. And there's a really good lawyer out there. He's the lawyer of, what is her name? Do you have her name right there? One of the cases, one of the women who's being attacked by the RIAA.
Denise Barker.
Yeah, Denise Barker's attorney has actually written this really long, well, it's not really long. It's 8 pages and then 2 pages of footnotes, a paper that he's trying to supply to all judges who may not be as savvy to the subject, to explain to them things that they need to keep in mind while they try these cases, because he's finding that in a lot of cases, some things that precedent should hold up to are not being held up to, for one of the reasons being because the judges and the juries don't understand how it relates, because these are really, really technical cases.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that most of the people they go after end up doing a settlement, because the RIA comes and says that, you know, for each song, it needs to be $150,000.
Right, which actually goes against, because it actually goes against constitutional statutes as far as how you
damages and things.
Yeah,
like
how
that.
You count for damages and things of that nature.
Of that nature,
it's something along the lines of the same. I believe it was the same attorney calculated out that for every illegal download, it's something like $3 of a loss.
$350-ish,
and what they and then they fine you something like $2,000, and it's the law is that damages can't exceed a certain amount in proportion to how much was lost, and the damages that are being awarded to these companies far exceed the constitutional limits that have been laid down.
But what's interesting is, even though they're you think they'd be reaping all this extra revenue, and we're going to go into this a little more later, but they're actually losing money. Every lawsuit they're losing money. Even though they're suing regular people, and here's another one.
How is that
in
possible?
Warner versus Barry, the RIA actually sued a man who lived in a homeless shelter. Probably some guy that was just messing around with a computer in the homeless shelter, and someone told him how to download a song, and he was like, oh, cool, I want to listen to music, sure. He had probably had no idea what he was doing, and they went after him, a homeless man. The RIA went after a homeless man, and that was Warner versus Barry. So,
and that's Warner Music Group, right?
Yes, that's correct. Warner Music Group, which I believe is the second or third largest music label in the entire world. So it's up there with, I believe, Sony's number one. And yeah, it's one of the big ones. Warner Music Group, WMG on the stock market. And we're gonna talk about them a little more because I actually followed them for some time to see how their stocks were affected by all this nonsense.
Well, why don't we get into that right now? How were their stocks affected by this nonsense?
Well, let me tell you.
Because
the
remember,
Motley Fool.
We made a claim earlier when we were doing our tirade that the RIAA ignores the will of its own shareholders. And how do we know that?
Well, if you go to the Motley Fool, it's really easy to track a company and anything that it does that relates to its investors and shareholders and things like that. Go to the Motley Fool. It's fool.com. It's a really cool site for anyone that's interested in like financial stuff, getting in the stock market. And I tracked it and watched as the Motley Fool actually rated Warner Music Group as one of the worst stocks in the world for one of its articles they did. And that's Thursday's Worst Stocks in the World by Tim Bayers. That was January 4th, 2008. Yeah, one of the worst stocks in the world, top five. Okay. Uh-huh. Then we go on to every time the RA blasts its customers, we have and all the letters they send out to the universities always come back and get a lot of it's basically they're not making up the revenues that they're suing for, and that's all the shareholders really care about. Here's another big one. The RIA wins, but what does it lose? Okay. Let's see if I can summarize this article. This goes back to the Jamie Thomas.
Mm-hmm. One of the other poor women who are being sued by the RIAA for an egregious amount of money.
Yep. Basically, they wanted to fine her for $222,000 for downloading 24 songs.
So do the math. That far exceeds the boundaries.
And
I can find the real numbers.
Yeah, sure. And the Fool gives a funny commentary that says that many look like contenders for really lame 80s night parties, in my opinion. Okay. And they're saying that that's quite a premium. The jury ended up deciding to fine Thomas $9,250 for each of the 24 songs. And so that's quite a lot more than the 99 cent iTunes songs or the 88 cent Walmart ones. My foolish colleague, it says, Anders Bylund recently noted a legal boilerplate change, suggesting that the industry might back away from the idea that making a track available for downloading, even with no takers, was worth pursuing because so many of those cases have been thrown out of courts. In Thomas's case, it wasn't proven that anyone actually downloaded the files, yet she's being forced to pay anyway. So the RIA may disappoint Anders and not back down after all. If this logic sounds fuzzy to you, you're not alone. Then they go on to say that the other big ones like Sony and some of the other ones, they pour millions of dollars into pursuing their own customers and prosecuting them. And this is where the key is right here. And they say, judging from comments at the trial, they have no clue. They have nary a clue how much they're losing from illegal downloading, among other details that point to utter cluelessness. Now, this is the person we're talking about, an authority on the stock market here, the Motley Fool. Those who own these company shares, they say, should think long and hard about this crusade, spending millions to gain a couple hundred thousand here and there, or settlements in a couple of $1,000 range. Some of them are even less, basically, is what they're saying. Doesn't really sound like the smartest use of cash.
No, it's ridiculous.
So, what short-term thinking and a short-sighted waste is what they're calling this. The RIA's, quote, strategy seeks to distract attention from its anachronistic business model in an industry that goes out of its way to inspire fear in its customers strikes me as one that investors would do well to avoid. And indeed they did, because they've had times of up and down, but overall music industry stocks, particularly with Warner Music Group, seem to be
gradually falling. They did have times of... Right now, they're on the decline again. And they did make it to one of Motley Fool's worst stock picks. So they're ignoring the will of the shareholders. Basically, they're not using their cash very wisely at all. They're pursuing... They're getting... Even though they're like basically bankrupting, I've heard another type of person they go after are college students. And basically, to get their money, they'll take your scholarship money. They'll take your car money, your rent. If you have a house, they'll take that. So they're making these kids dirt poor, go into debt, you know, bankrupt.
Right.
At best. All to get a couple thousand dollars, and yet they're spending millions and losing millions of dollars on it. So of course the shareholders aren't going to be happy. So RIA, you need to stop ignoring your shareholders, if nothing else, and treat them like who they are, the shareholders. They own part of the company.
Right. Now, I wasn't able to find, while you were in that explanation, the exact numbers that I was looking for, but I did at least have the chance to go straight to the United States Constitution and at least see the simple phrasing that excessive fines shall not be imposed at all. I believe that's Amendment 15. And I think that we can all agree that the amount that they're fining for each song downloaded is absolutely terribly excessive.
Yeah.
And especially when you couple that with an interpretation by the Supreme Court on the right to bear arms not too long ago that we talked about in a previous episode, how their reasoning was that the Constitution was written to be understood by everyone.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure your average person would look at that and say, yeah, that's an excessive fine.
Yeah, seriously.
Why don't we take this moment, since we're about halfway through,
all right,
and just take a short little break from the topic and send out a question to Cha-Cha.
Maybe we can ask him about excessive fines.
That's not a bad idea.
You want to try it?
Sure. Well, let's ask him that, too, since I already have this put in my
phone. Oh, you already have a question.
It'll take me like 10 minutes to...
All right.
This stupid phone. But yeah, if you want to get your phone out or something, we can start typing another question. But,
and again, this is Stump Cha-Cha. You send a text message to 242-242, which is Cha-Cha, mm-hmm. on your ringtone dial pad.
Or other words, phone.
Yeah.
And they claim to be able to answer any question within reason. And of course, they don't pay for your text message, but they don't charge you to use their service either. So what we've done in the past is we've tried to ask them questions that they haven't been able to answer. We've stumped them four times and they've... Oh my. And they've... Sorry, I won't tell you what I said that about. And they've beaten us seven times. And we plan to beat them again. Now, this isn't on the same topic because we thought it might be nice to take a little break right here in the middle. For those of you who are fans of classic literature, we're going into a new field of questions. We've gone through linguistics and anthropology and all kinds of things. Now we're going into classical literature for today's question. And for those of you who want to see if you can beat Cha-Cha, or if you know the answer, go ahead and pull up Google, see if you can find the answer before they do. This week's question for Cha-Cha is... In the book Great Expectations by Charles Dickens, what was Mrs. Joe's maiden last name? So again, there's a character, Mrs. Joe, in Great Expectations.
All right.
And
later you'll tell us why that's even more tricky than we might think.
Should I tell you now or should I wait till they answer and get it right?
Yeah, wait till they answer and can't get it right so the listeners can have a chance to beat them.
Yeah, and remember, this is like our fourth level of intensity for Cha-Cha now.
And we're going to keep on kicking it up.
Yeah, so the question one more time for those of you who want to fight Cha-Cha, battle it out, see if you can beat him. In Great Expectations by Charles Dickens, what was Mrs. Joe's maiden last name? And I am sending 2242. Oh, this isn't working. How many times have I said I hate this phone on the show?
Do you want to say what phone it is?
No,
we're not going to hate on it that much.
Okay, 242, 242.
Actually, you don't even have to worry about it. I'm pretty sure they don't make phones anymore. That's what I heard a couple of months ago.
Really?
They were going to stop making phones.
You just gave it away then, maybe. But anyways.
You can do the research and find out.
And I'm sending the message right now. And the message is sent, so we'll see if Cha-Cha can tell us Mrs. Joe's maiden last name.
All right. And maybe you guys can find it first.
Maybe so. I'll tell you what, I'm going to change my mic here and make it sound a little weird, just so I can tell you that now we're going to give you the weekly Tech Bite with Ethan Clark. Take it away, Ethan.
Thanks, guys. This is Ethan Clark's Tech Bite of the Week. A new Nintendo DS? According to MCV sources, a new Nintendo DS handheld gaming system will be announced. It, however, won't seem to ship until after the holidays. This news and yet another Wii shortage puts Nintendo at a huge disadvantage for the holiday season. Not get a Wii for Christmas one year? Shame on me. Not get a Wii for Christmas this year? Shame on Nintendo. Apple has decided to discontinue subjecting their iPhone application to a non-disclosure agreement, if the app had already been released. This will help developers in the long run, but if I know anything about Apple, this seems to be a step in the right direction, but a far cry from the open source platform of the Google T-Mobile HTC G1 phone. Lastly, Digital Cinema Implementation Partners has worked out a deal to fund the change of a lot of movie theaters to a 3D picture. Considering the dozen or so films that are slated to be released next year will be in 3D. I've noticed there are a handful of awful films that have come out on 3D over the last year, but Pixar plans to release all their future films in 3D, as well as DreamWorks Animation with the film Monsters vs. Aliens that is slated to come out next spring. Now, only if the food cinema implementation partners could change popcorn prices, our world would truly be a better place. And this has been Ethan Clark's Tech Bite of the Week.
All right, thank you, Ethan. And once again, if everybody could please ignore the fact that my mic sounds a little bit different just before and just after the Tech Bite. Thanks.
Okay, so here's what we're going back to. We just have so much information. We're trying to like get it all in. This is really tough.
Yeah.
Probably the toughest podcast we've done yet. But nonetheless, we want to get you guys the facts. So the RIA believes that the DRM, which once again stands for Digital Rights Management.
And in a second, we'll get into the philosophical debate about digital rights management a little bit.
And basically, digital rights management is kind of like a software that is attached to each song that limits your use of it.
Right, and basically, it goes not only into songs, but also in computer programs and games and all kinds of stuff.
And DVDs, so, kind of like how they do with some computer software programs, where you can only install it on two or three computers.
If you're a Mac user, you should know that your operating system can only be reinstalled 5 times before it no longer lets you reinstall it. Also, your DVD player, you can only change the region on it 5 times before
like
it stops working on you.
That's ridiculous, but that's a whole other argument.
A whole other argument.
So that's what DRM is, and all these companies are starting to realize, except Apple for some reason, that getting rid of DRM is a great thing.
Although we did see an article that we haven't been able to verify that the head of Apple, Steve Jobs, is now supposedly against DRM, which if you live in the real world, you would see no reason to believe that whatsoever. But
well,
if we verify that,
we'll
come back to you.
Kind of what the quote kind of said was like, I'll do it if you guys all do it too.
Speaking to the major labels.
Exactly. So what's interesting about the DRM is Amazon.com is actually a big one that went DRM-free, and they're actually taking a huge chunk of iTunes share because of that. Even though their interface isn't nearly as easy to use or anything like that, the fact that you can download a song that you bought and actually own it and actually decide that, hey, I want to put it on my iPod and my computer.
I'll burn it to a CD. I'll convert the file type.
And DRM,
I can let my friend listen to it.
Exactly. It lets you decide what you want to do with that which you own.
Right.
So,
the RIAA, Walmart is another one. October 9th, as of October 9th, Walmart's online music store will also be DRM free.
Yes, that's the good side of it. The bad side is that all the people that bought the DRM stuff, basically their songs are going to disappear.
Yeah, Walmart told them, burn everything you have to a CD right now. Otherwise, on October 9th, you won't be able to use it anymore.
What if they already put it on their iPods? Then what if they've already used up their limit? Oh, well, no songs for you.
Sorry.
So it's like mystical songs that just went poof.
Yeah,
out of
again, it's
they, I have a feeling those
it's
people.
It's more like you renting it than actually owning it.
And these are people that are trying not to be. You know, they're deciding. I'm not going to steal music. I'm not going to be a pirate. I'm going to go buy it. But I still want digital music because it's the way I want to do it. And now those people are actually getting their music stolen.
So
from
since
them.
You said that, let's introduce the first and maybe most fundamental piece of the anti-DRM philosophical argument.
Okay.
Is that it only hurts the honest consumer.
That's right.
Because there will always be hackers.
Pirated music doesn't have our DRM free.
That's right. And so if you're a pirate, if you're an illegal downloader, you're going to get the DRM free one. And the only person who's going to be hit with DRM restrictions is the person who's not trying to engage in illegal activity with it in the first place.
Which right now is iTunes. If you guys use iTunes, you know, who knows when your songs are going to go poof, because that's what happened with Walmart when they switched over to DRM-free. Who knows what's going to happen to yours?
Except
I'd
this
write
podcast.
Them and ask them.
This podcast, once again, is DRM-free. It's
yes,
an MP3.
That's right. And it is on iTunes,
and
among
it's free.
Other things. So.
Right.
Yeah, you won't lose our podcast, and if you do, we'll give it to you from our website anyway. So
yeah.
There's a lot of different places you can get it for free anyways. So the DRM is saying that they believe that DRM is actually not only, because we're seeing that DRM is kind of going away a little bit because the companies like Amazon and Walmart are realizing that it's not good to punish your customers. It's not profitable at all.
Right.
And so they say, on the other hand, that DRM is going to make a comeback. The RIA says that everything in the future is going to be all about subscription. Now, although I don't disagree with the fact that I can see subscription becoming more popular, they're saying that it's going to be subscription-based to where you can never actually own the music. So the second your subscription runs out, you don't want to subscribe anymore, you go from having however many songs to zero songs, just like that.
Right.
And the RIA likes that. They love what Walmart did. And that's what they're saying.
I found the numbers, by the way, just real quick that we were talking about earlier. That attorney estimated $3.50 loss per download. Rulings by the U.S. Supreme Court and other courts have set precedent that financial punishments exceeding a 9-to-1 ratio are unconstitutional.
There you go.
So precedent says that the amounts they're being fined are unconstitutional because they exceed a 9-to-1 ratio. They wouldn't be able to charge you more than whatever 350 times 9 is per song.
Indeed.
Instead of, it's certainly not $2,000.
Yeah.
And these ridiculous.
Ridiculous.
Amounts, yeah, they're trying. I'm sorry for interrupting
you.
Hey,
no problem.
Go ahead.
You got the facts. That's all that matters. So the next argument for DRM. Now, neither John nor me, I don't know if that's correct grammar. Neither one of us are.
That is correct.
I wouldn't say that we're strict environmentalists. Would you? Do we go and tie ourselves?
We
to trees?
Are not. We are not environmental activists, but we do care about the environment.
We care about the environment.
I recycle when there's a recycle
exactly.
bin around, and I.
And you have one of those green bags, don't you? From
yes,
Publix.
I even have a Publix green bag. That's
and
right.
We do stuff. We do what we can. We don't tie ourselves to trees or do things that are a little extreme. But we do our part in trying to help the environment. Now, here's an argument for those of you that...
I hate to cut you off.
Oh.
Cha-Cha sent us a message.
All right, let's see what we got.
And Cha-Cha says, Connery was Mrs. Joe's maiden last name.
Is that correct?
No. Nice try, Cha-Cha. I don't know where they got Connery from.
Sean Connery, they assumed.
No, the last name given for her in the book is actually Gargery.
Huh, but how did you find that?
From reading it.
No.
but
what's
yeah,
the trick?
The trick is that Gargery is her last name because her husband's last name is Gargery, and you have to know the last name of the main character Pip, whose last name is Pirrip. And the reason his name is Pip is because his name is Philip Pirrip, and so when he was little, all he could say was Pip. That's why his name is. But anyway, so his last name is Pirrip. You have to know that he's actually Mrs. Joe's little brother, and that her and her husband have sort of adopted him, and so you have to infer that she would have the same maiden last name as him, since her last name is Gargery, which would have been Pirrip.
Oh,
so
cool.
Sorry, Cha-Cha, we stumped you again.
What do you know?
We're catching up. The score is now 5-7, Cha-Cha winning, but we are catching up.
We are catching up. Not bad. All right. So going back to the DRM, what we're saying now is not green at all, and it promotes non-green practices. So those of you who are concerned about the environment should be concerned about this.
That's right.
First reason.
First reason is that to run the machines and the servers and do all it takes to check if you've only installed it 5 times and make sure you actually own it and not pirated it, they actually use up to 25% more energy than they do when they are running non-DRM music. In fact, it was the Windows or the Microsoft interface that went all the way up to 25%, where, to be fair, Apple only used 8% more energy, but still
that's 25% more energy than DRM free.
So that's what the range is. The different companies using giving you DRM music are actually using 25% more energy in their servers to worry about DRM. And what's the second reason?
That's right. The next one, let's go back to the Walmart example. So they said the only way you're going to be able to keep your songs after such and such a date, which isn't that far away. I think it's in
October 9th.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's like
today's the first.
Yeah, today's the first. So 8 days if you guys bought DRM songs off from Walmart and then
burn it to a CD.
What they recommend is they say the only way you're going to keep it is to burn it to a CD. So now you have thousands of songs that people across the nation have bought. And Walmart says, and you know, I'm not just blaming Walmart because this is the only way that you can keep your DRM-free songs. They say, burn it into CDs. Now, John, what are CDs made out of?
Oil. Petroleum.
That's right. And as you guys probably know, unless you've been living in a hole, oil is running out and it's getting more expensive.
Right. In fact, the largest oil field in Mexico, I forget the name of it offhand, but it supplies 1 out of every 50 barrels of oil in the world,
yeah,
is drying up. It's beginning to dry up. Supply is now increasing, is decreasing on a curve very quickly every year.
CDs are made out of oil, basically. I mean, that's really safe to say. They are.
Yeah, they are. Plastic is derived directly from petroleum.
Right. And so telling all these people, it's almost like we're taking a step backwards. We're coming to this like digital age, you know, where we don't need to actually use oil to make CDs. And then the RIA wants us to step back and said, nah, you know, use the oil anyways, just because it's our will. And then finally, the third problem.
The third problem, again, has to do with oil and efficiency. It's the fact that now that we've gone back to hard copies, you now have to ship those hard copies and move them around. You have to produce them, ship them, and move them, which all takes
between
more energy.
States and even, you know, yeah, between countries.
And all takes, at this point, all takes oil, but regardless, uses up more energy, increases carbon footprint. So the idea is that the idea of digital music in general
is green. It is. It really
it's
is.
It's entirely green.
And it sounds ridiculous that DRM will be bad for the environment, but the way we just laid it out for you, and by the way, let's give credit where credit's due. EcoGeek is ecogeek.org is where we got this. The name of the article is DRM is bad for you and for the planet. Yeah. Sounds like a ridiculous thing, like, oh, come on, you're stretching. But then when you listen to the argument, it's perfectly sound.
Right, because when you frame it this way, DRM or digital music is green, whereas hard copy music is less green. So the move towards digital music, digital music is green unless you have to back up that music by still using the hard copies.
Yeah, it like defeats the whole purpose.
You're
paying more because when you buy the CD, you actually pay for the CD and the case and everything.
And you could say, well, I don't have to back up my music, but the problem is
songs go poof.
The second there's a glitch in the server or your company decides to go DRM free, which seems to be the trend these days, you lose all your music if you don't back it up.
So, doesn't sound too good, does it?
Right. So, sorry, there you go, DRM, not green.
All right, the last thing that we want to tell you about, we have so much information, we'll come back on this topic another time, but for this feature, we really wanted to give you a lot. The last thing that we wanted to tell you about was probably the dirtiest thing yet. Nah, can't say it's the dirtiest thing yet, because they're all pretty dirty. But basically, the RIA is in bed with politicians,
right,
and they're doing things behind our backs. Tell us about it, John.
Well, one thing I can tell you is that there's a very, very recent bill. It was S number 3325 in the Senate that promotes DRM and more of this, more of the ridiculous side of anti-piracy, and we'll give you a link to learn more about that. But it passed unanimously in the Senate. which means
all of a sudden bipartisanship becomes a big thing in Congress against us. Now that it's against the people, they're willing to work with each
other. Which means somebody, all they had to do was stand up and say, yeah, I have this bill, you know, it's it's pro-DRM, it's anti-piracy, and I don't think we even need to vote for it. Do you guys agree? And nobody says anything.
Whatever.
All it takes is one person to say, no, we have to vote on it. And they have to vote on it.
Yep.
It can't pass unanimously. So not a single person in the Senate either knows or cares about this issue or is not taking a donation from lobbyists that are pro-DRM and anti-piracy.
I would say they're not doing their job
and
very well.
Then when it went to the House of Representatives, a few voted against it, but somewhere along the lines of like 90% of them.
I wish we could get those few that voted against it, because those are the people that are actually doing their job.
But we can't, because do you know why? Because they agreed in the House that it wasn't necessary to keep a record of who voted for what in this
convenient.
Particular bill.
How
so
convenient.
You should know that as of right now, the bill is sitting on the desk of President Bush.
It's made it all the way through all the necessary legal actions except the president's desk.
Now, the Constitution gives the President of the United States 10 days to sign or veto a bill. If he ignores it for 10 days, it automatically becomes law.
So we hope that he's not like other fellow politicians, that he won't just say nothing on the issue and let it just kind of ride through.
Right.
Which would basically mean the RIA just gave us law. Imagine that. You know?
Yeah.
We're told how law is given in the United States. In this case, it would be the RIA delivers it. Demands it, and politicians don't really stand their ground. What's interesting too about this bill is some of the wording was in case someone would oppose it. There's wording that would attract Democrats and some wording that would attract Republicans. One of the key ones that I thought was absolutely ridiculous is when they compared pirating music to terrorism, and they said that if they could get this bill passed, if only we could keep pursuing these people and make it easier, then somehow we'll stop terrorism too.
If you'd like to know, while Nate, you talk about that, I'll do another research and I'll look up, because what we do know is the name of the person who did propose the bill in the first place. So our main nemesis in regards to that bill is, I'll tell you in just a second. Why don't you go ahead with that?
So,
there?
Okay, here's what I'm going to do then. I'm going to tell you a little more about what's exactly in this bill, in case you're wondering. Basically, it's pro-IP legislation, which requires the government to work directly on the industry, and by industry, we're talking about, again, the RIA, the music industry, on their behalf against the public interest.
Proposed by Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont.
All right. Do we have his address?
You can find it.
Okay, here's the thing, though. Now, I want you guys to keep in mind that this isn't about Democrat and Republican.
I said
right
that
now.
Because that's the trend. Whenever you say a senator's name, you say their party and where they're from. It's just what you do.
Because the point is, it doesn't even really matter that he came up with it.
Because it passed
everybody
unanimously
on
in the
both sides said whatever and let it pass. So all you Republican fans out there, your politicians are screwing you over. All of you Democrat fans out there, guess what? Your politicians are screwing you over, and they're doing it without you knowing about it, because this actually isn't really big in the news right now. Conveniently, it happens to go through during a time of economic crisis,
right,
when they can pass things through the back door
and
say, hey,
this happened
this
last week, by the way.
We need to focus on more important things.
During the time everybody was freaking out about the economy, they somehow found time to sneak this thing through. And maybe
even though McCain had to suspend his campaign to work on the economy and all this nonsense.
And even though Barack Obama was available to be called if needed.
Exactly. Somehow, even though they were so, so busy that they found time to let this nonsense pass through. So once again, describing what it is. Basically, they're making the government basically do the dirty work of the RIA, right?
Yeah.
Besides over $23 million in congressional campaign contribution, the industry used scare tactics to get it passed, trying to draw a connection between copyright infringement and terrorism. The bill expresses the sense of Congress as agreeing that terrorists and organized crime utilize piracy, counterfeiting, and infringement to fund some of their activities, and that stopping copyright infringement should be among the highest of priorities of government. And so they tried to use these scare tactics to get it passed. And basically right now, it's sitting on President Bush's desk. Now, here's the ultimate irony, is President Bush right now has the opportunity to be the only agent of change in this whole situation.
Right. Not John McCain, not Barack Obama.
Neither. They let it go through.
George W. Bush.
They let this ridiculousness go through that's only going to hurt us. Both of them did.
Now,
whether he's going to do it or not, this is his chance to really shine.
And let me put this one thing in perspective, too. In case you're somebody who isn't, previously to listening to this, didn't really know much about this issue, and you would like to know where the sides stand, The particular article that Nate was reading has a post on Dig, and it has 2,400 some digs.
Yeah, which is pretty high for Dig.
Meaning people like the article. And whenever there's an article on Dig, people go through and make comments. Now, I will say, in all honesty, Dig tends to go a little bit on the liberal side.
It is a little more.
With the way people make their comments.
Half the things on there right now are kind of hailing.
But it's not entirely liberal.
It's not, no. Not at all.
What I will say is, I read through 189 comments when I looked at that. Not a single one was somebody who was
for this legislation.
In favor of this legislation. Every single person.
So here's what we do.
Who made a comment?
That's right. As politicians, unite together against our interests as the people. We need to unite together, also bipartisan. We need to forget our differences for at least this one issue. You guys can still vote for whoever you want at the elections, whatever. But at least for this one issue, since they came together bipartisanly to screw us over, we also need to come together to stop this nonsense from happening. Now, honestly, there's not much left we can do except for one thing. I need to direct you guys at this time to go to www.defectivebydesign.org. And here's what you need to do to get involved. And this is the only way that you can truly make a change at this point. And that's basically to tell President Bush, hey, you got to veto this. This is your one chance to be called an agent of change and not protect corporate interest and the will of the people. Do right. this. And so how can we do that?
All you got to do is send an email to comments@whitehouse.gov. Or also make sure if you visit that website, that URL yeah. that Nate just mentioned, it links you to everything. It's too late to write your senator, though you can write him if you want.
Because
tell them how
they
disappointed
already,
you are.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's not too late to write President Bush and tell him not to sign this bill. It's the one thing. And also, we understand that we're pretty much out of time on this, but it's our call to action. And you need to look out for blog yeah. posts. At our blog coming up, it's geocentricpodcast.blogspot.com, and there's a link at our website where you need to be on the lookout for coming up blog posts this week where we're going to explain some more of the philosophical yeah. sides of DRM versus anti-DRM so you can get a better sense of what the arguments are. But for now, we hope that at least what we've been able to do is give you a call to action.
And so when you go to defectivebydesign.org, you might be inspired to write your own letter completely from scratch. But if you need a little bit of help, they actually give you an example of a letter you could write. And we're not going to read that. Just visit the site and you can see. It basically says how we're disappointed that this was able to pass Congress and pass all the way through. President Bush, this is, you know, your chance to really make a change here and, you know, basically veto this
right.
because it's for the everybody's best interest, except for big music.
So I would like to say that this is the first time, or it marks a new stride for us as a show, in that it is the first time we have officially endorsed what you may consider a political standpoint.
Yeah.
So we're evolving, we're changing, we feel that it's a good thing.
And again, this is not a conservative or a liberal thing.
No.
So it's kind of an easy first one to
remember,
choose.
Not a single comment was in favor of this. The
yeah.
people
and
are
we're
decidedly
not being, we're not being
against
extreme
DRM.
On one side or the other.
Right. Because everybody feels like once you buy something, it's yours.
Yep.
I mean, nobody thinks that there should be no measures to inhibit somebody. Like if I made a product and somebody bought it and then started selling it, and so I was losing sales because they were buying it from somebody else, of course I'd be mad.
Yeah.
And of course there should be some measures against that.
That's right.
But once I buy something, you don't get to control what I do with it.
That's right.
is the fundamental point here.
And there's a lot of arguments you can go on both sides of the aisle to kind of support this too. One of them is actually looking at prohibition when you banned alcohol. It didn't really work. And the
right.
prohibition is being compared. Or on the conservative side also, you could talk about gun control, for example.
Right. You criminalize guns. Only criminals have guns.
Exactly. And
right. So you make
basically
these things criminal.
The criminals,
criminals
are always
get the free music.
Yeah, they're always going to do it anyways, is
right.
the point. So, and there's a lot of arguments. And, you know, you can say that the music industry, in my opinion, here's my opinion.
Okay.
The music industry needs to evolve. We're going through change in technology, and the music industry wants to keep things status quo, where they have top power, they have control over everything. Well, I want to turn you to the story about Radiohead when you get the chance, and read about what they did if you haven't already heard about it. They basically fired their record label and did everything themselves, and, you know, hired ad agencies and stuff to do their advertising and whatnot, but they didn't need a record label. And I think this is really scaring the RIA, because they're basically, nothing can really happen without them in the past. But now things are changing, technology is evolving, and they don't want to lose their top dog position. Unfortunately, that's what's naturally going to happen, and any kind of artificial laws that they try and create aren't going to work, because we're evolving, and that's what it is.
Well spoken.
All right, so on that note, we actually, at the end of the show, we usually talk about our new albums. We just want to tell you about one this week, because it relates to our show.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure it came out this week. So
I think
I'm pretty sure it did. And that's Nine Inch Nails. Whether you're a fan or not, give them a shot, because guess what? It's free.
That's right.
Not only is it free, they're offering it for free. They're the next ones to say, you know what? And basically, it's a pay what you want. You know, if you want to get it for free, you can. If you want to pay a dollar for it, you can. If you want to pay $50 because you like Nine Inch Nails and want to give them a donation.
Yeah,
you can give them that much. The cool thing about it is that this CD is actually high definition. And if you want, you can download the high definition one also for free. Or you can get the regular, you know, regular quality MP3s. But the high definition one is 1.2 gigabytes, pretty large. And I think it'd be pretty exciting to listen to. So once again, you know, you might not be a Nine Inch Nails fan, but give them a shot, because you have nothing to lose.
That's right. So that about wraps it up for today. And we're going to hit you off with a new song, of course, by the artist Run Kid Run. And I want to point out as well that these guys are, according to our official music gatherer, who claims he's getting permissions from these bands and these record labels to give these songs to you in MP3 format. Remember, these songs are coming to you at the end of our podcast in an MP3 format, which is something to be acknowledged and something to be praised. So
yeah, basically these indie artists are giving their songs away for free so you can check them out. And they're just trying to do their own thing. They're not trying to get you. And they don't say you can only listen to their song three times, or you can only put it on one iPod. So give all these guys, go back through the episodes, listen to all this music, because you're supporting a good cause when you do that.
Right.
And if you like them, buy their CD, you know,
and in particular,
go on Amazon and buy their MP3s, and go to a show if you see them come in town and buy some cool shirts or something.
That's right. In particular, buy the album Love at the Core by Run Kid Run.
That's right.
Because you're about to hear the song off it called Rescue Me, and it's an awesome song. You can check out their MySpace. I believe it's myspace.com/RunKidRun. I hope that's right. It's not right in front of me.
If not, you can search it and
you'll find him. But anyway, so that's it. Thank you for taking the time to listen again once more to the show. We've had a blast researching this DRM.
That's right. It was really fun. So once again, let's send off to the RIAA. Screw you.
I got a As I take the fall.